Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I have to explain that?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Unlocked. It's IGN's Xbox show coming at you each and every week, Tuesday, 3 p.m., unlocked.ign.com, or a day later on podcast services and youtube.com/IGN Unlocked. Tons to talk about this week. Huge show. Project xCloud, Microsoft's streaming gaming initiative. They teased it at E3. We'll talk a lot more about that because Microsoft themselves detailed it. Plus, some late-breaking news just before we recorded. For once, before we recorded, we've got some news from our friends at Kotaku about Microsoft's next probable studio acquisition. So look for more about that. Plus, some good news regarding the displaced employees at Telltale Games as well as The Walking Dead project itself as it looks to finish up somehow, some way, its final season. Plenty more to go. All that and more this week on Unlocked. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. To my right, Brendan Graber. Hi.
Hey,
buddy.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, good to have you back. You were in West Virginia for a few days. We're going to talk a lot more about why and what you're up to in just a minute. Brendan Tyrell.
Hello.
Buddy.
Hi.
Good to see you.
We've got very similar names, so this should be a fun show.
Yeah, next week, Brandon Hunt will be joining us as well.
I don't like that moniker because B-Team automatically implies that we're a step below.
Oh, no.
Have pride in your...
Oh, I'm very proud.
Miranda Sanchez, hi.
Hello.
You've brought the grunt plushie today.
Yeah, I brought him back. I just like having him around.
Also, two-thirds of Vault.
Just watching over.
Yeah. I want a high five, but
it's like the can't quite air reach. High five. Yeah.
All right, so I want to start with our guest of honor, Brendan Graber. You made your way to West Virginia, of all places. Bethesda had themselves an event at a place that's in Fallout 76.
And they locked us in a bunker for 3 days.
Not to really. Play Fallout 76. So,
they only let you out when you finish.
I thought it was like the best PR move, just like, we're going to lock you for 200 years to celebrate, and we'll drop a bomb in the hotel.
We'll let you out at the centennial.
Taking that PR marketing budget a little too far.
They had to spend it somehow.
Yeah. Well, you lived. You made it.
Yes, I made it out.
Congratulations.
You even changed out of your jumpsuit, your vault suit.
It's a very creepy hotel. I got to just say, like, it's the Greenbrier, and in the game they call it the White Spring, cause they have the White Spring on the hotel. Like, it used to be called like the White Spring Hotel, in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. And it's like a cross between like The Shining and your grandma's house. Like, there's really gaudy
like the couches are wrapped in plastic, or what?
But there's two little twin girls walking down the hallways at any time.
There's like these really creepy like hallways and like really weird flooring and like carpets and stuff. And like, apparently that's kind of the point to be so gaudy, because they actually built a congressional bunker underneath the property that was hidden and wasn't public knowledge during the Cold War, but it never got used. Because obviously, thankfully.
Yeah,
and so, like, they didn't talk about it for years and years until someone finally leaked it, and then they finally opened the public for tours.
Cool.
So it's kind of the perfect tie-in where it's not Fallout 76, but you can actually visit that same bunker in the game.
Nice. Well, how about the game? So we had a couple of our UK office members go see it. And you are our lone USA representative.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all the knowledge in this office, in this situation. So what did you think of it? I mean, what were your sort of expectations going in versus what the game ended up being in your time with it?
I was very confused going in. Like, we had seen only the tidbits during E3 and elsewhere. Like, is this a Fallout game? Is this a weird kind of spinoff where it's like, you know, bits and pieces of it? And playing it, I realized that if you liked Fallout 4, there's a whole lot more of that. It's Fallout 4 with online elements in a very basic sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Elder Scrolls Online where they kind of reworked everything and it doesn't really resemble an Elder Scrolls anymore. Whereas Fallout 4, like, they have that modified creation engine. There is the VATS, but it's real time. So you kind of like auto aim now instead of actually slowing down to pick your shots, which I don't really like as much, but the, that exploration, like, you know, every location has that patented Bethesda like level design where like, oh,
like handcrafted.
Like what happened here? There's a skeleton, like there's a notepad, like, but a lot of it is, you know, finding out your own story as you progress. But it's also very odd because it's the first Fallout game with no human NPCs. You see robots, you see bodies of humans, but you never actually find people to talk to who send you on a quest. It's always from a holotape, from a robot, from a radio signal. And it's, that's kind of the weirdest part where I don't know how it's going to play out. Mm-hmm. I went on a couple of side quests in the game and I started the main quest series, but like there is that lonely feeling where it's like, it's almost like The Witness or Myst, where you've arrived in a place after humans have left.
Yeah.
And you have to pick up the pieces. And it feels like you just missed them. Like there was a camp I went to and it was full of super mutants and they had taken over a settler camp at this like crash plane, plane, and they had rebuilt the plane in like a treehouse setting. And you could see the bodies of settlers. I'm like, oh, I just missed them. Their bodies here. They're not that, they're not skeletons. They're just corpses.
Still
like,
warm.
Yeah. There's, and I'm just like, is that going to be everywhere I go? Or it's like, oh, you just missed the guy. He just left. And like, now you have to find a holotape. But like, can that sustain a meaningful story? I'm not sure.
Right.
But I did have fun. Like, I really had fun going off on my own. We were with a group of four people. We had a Bethesda developer kind of like as a tour guide.
Sure.
And then I was with GameSpot and Game Informer. And they kind of said, like, if you want to go on your own, feel free. So I just immediately just booked it.
See you guys.
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah.
I'm doing wiki stuff. I'm looking at the map. I actually, they were pissed off because I was looking at the map in the beginning of the game instead of going outside to get in the group. And they're like, where's IGN? I'm like, be right there. Hang on.
Just scribbling notes down furiously.
But I do like the map because if you didn't remember Fallout 3, Fallout 4, there was like that ugly kind of Pip-Boy grid. You couldn't really tell what was what. And now if you look at the map, it's like an amusement park or like a zoo. Like you see these giant icons of like buildings.
It's like nice illustrations.
Yeah, like really nice, like larger than life pictures of like, you know, a Ferris wheel or a giant gator. And you want to go like, oh, wow, that looks cool. I don't know what that is, but I want to go check it out. And it kind of encourages that exploration factor of like you don't know what's over there, but there's like a blasted blackened part of the map. And like, wow, that looks cool. I need to go check that out next.
So how was it playing A, with other people, and B, alone?
Yeah, I guess it's very odd. Like, we talked a lot to kind of, like, coordinate. And, like, some people turned, like, the de facto leaders of, like, we should go here next.
Yeah.
We're like, okay. And then, like, it was nice to have people with you. It felt like it kind of gave you a sense of security of, like, if you ran into trouble, you had people at your back. And we were actually taking on, like, level 15, level 16 monsters, level 5. So I don't know if like the damage reduction or the damage qualities had been changed a bit for a group.
Scaled.
Yeah. But it felt like it was fun. And the way that they handle loot now is that every container, including like, you know, plants and stuff, they're instanced. So if I go to loot a box, someone else can loot it too, and they'll find stuff in there as well.
Okay.
But if it's on the desk and I take a bobblehead, which GameSpot did, nobody else can get that bobblehead until it respawns somewhere else.
Damn it, GameSpot.
I was very sad that I missed that bobblehead. But it was kind of cool because
–
yeah, I got it.
I missed GameSpot and take it from them.
We didn't actually enable PvP until level 5. Uh-huh. It's pacifist mode until level 5, and then you can start engaging in, you know, fighting other people, which is a very weird thing in itself.
Is friendly fire on?
I think after 5, friendly fire is on, and it gives you an alert. It's like, oh, you hit someone, they can hit you back. But it's like very reduced damage.
Okay, right. Because remember, there's like the failsafe there. It's like if you accidentally hit somebody you didn't intend to, like you don't actually engage unless you have murderous intent.
Right. But we had some good moments, and it didn't feel like, you know, we were too crowded. Only like in the very beginning where everyone's rushing out the gate.
Sure.
Like there's like a initial camp you can find with a bunch of workstations, and only one guy can use a workstation at a time.
Mm.
Other people can salvage from that workstation, but they can't craft as well. So at one point, I was just like kind of waiting in line. Like I want to build the story.
That's what I love
next.
In video games.
But like, I imagine like after the initial rush of people, like you find a camp, you're probably gonna be the only one there, or like maybe with three people.
Do you all start? Do you all start at the same spot?
Like, you all start in Fallout 76, which is like an instanced area underground, and you load screen out into the world, and like that's the only starting location of the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I imagine like the farther you get from the vault, the harder it gets around. So like everybody is just by design going to be in this smaller area mm-hmm. for their first
And it's a very
hours.
Big map too. Yeah. And I felt like we immediately just rushed out and we didn't really like stay in that area. Mm. Like some people will kind of like go like the round the exploring area, like the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Whereas we just like, let's go east like as far as we can go until we hit like a mountain range. Yeah. And then when I went out on my own, like I had to avoid a lot more encounters because I was in dangerous territory, but I still felt like it was that it kind of just went back into that Fallout vibe of just like, I'm on my own. I'm listening to a recording table. I'm like exploring this old house. But I do wonder though, if like you're in a group, we didn't chat too much, but like there's a lot of audio tapes and you have to deal with your audio log and three other guys yelling at you. And it's kind of like, could you guys shut up for a minute? I got to hear what she's saying.
The max party size is 4, right?
Yeah, and yeah. The server size is only around like 24, give or take. Okay. They might change that later. So it's a very sparse world, and there it will be area-based chat. Mm. But it's like, I'd hate it if I was like trying to listen to like this important document, and someone's like going like, hey, where
I
are you
I want my
gonna?
Chocolate milk!
Yeah, I was just thinking that too.
I think there is
Mom,
a
Mom, I'm
option.
Listening to the story! It's sounding more and more like Rust. Listening
yeah,
to
well,
describe
that's
it.
Actually about.
Exactly what I was going to ask, or that's part of it, is when it was announced, it was like, oh, is this kind of a Rust survival game? But then the other sort of, I don't want to call it a concern, but like for someone like me, I didn't like the building, crafting, mm-hmm. Town building elements of Fallout 4. Yeah. Is that what this game is?
I don't think so, though. That can be what you, if you want it to be. Okay. Like, there is a base building element. And what's nice is that you carry around like a little, it's called the camp, like the CAMP. Mm. It's like a portable campsite, which you can place down and then it becomes a free fast travel spot. And you can salvage things there. Nice. You can start creating a base. And then when you decide to pack up and go, it'll blueprint everything. So that when you place somewhere else, that camp just springs up again with everything
nice.
You built.
Okay, mm-hmm. I like that.
And does,
like,
does it take time, or can you just be like, "I'm under fire, camp"?
You can leave it. You can just leave it there, run away, and then place a new camp. And it costs like 5 caps, and it'll just bring up everything. Or if you log off for the day, you take your camp with you. You come back, it comes up. If someone else is already there, then it just blueprints your stuff. It's like, okay, just go find somewhere else and put it down.
That's a nice change. Because in Rust, like, you built this awesome house, and then you log off for the night and come back, and someone has C4'd it to
Yeah, I like
cinders.
That.
So a big thing that's different about Fallout 76 versus Rust and other survival games is that you can see everyone on the map, mm-hmm. which is really unique, because in all those, you're just, like, listening and, like, trying to find who's out there and playing against the environment too. And I think because everything is so telegraphed with other players' positioning, it's going to be a lot easier to avoid aggressive situations. And because you do get the notification in like smaller damage from or reduced damage from other players at first, I think that's going to be really helpful for people who don't like the PvP aspect.
Yeah. As a person, like you saw, you remember Sea of Thieves. I had a lot of problems with griefers and I hated it. So on one point, I kind of like that if someone murders me and manages to kill me without fighting back, they are labeled a murderer and they can't see anyone else on the map anymore. So I can easily run away and get some distance and they'll find me again.
Yeah.
But as someone who would like PvP, like if I was into that, like I think about how I fight in Fallout 4, I like the sniper rifles. Mm. So what kind of annoys me is like if I have a sniper rifle and I get this perfect headshot and it goes plank like 5 damage and they're like, oh, someone just headshot you. Do you want to fight back? And they're just like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, that was a waste.
Yeah, I think just got to go ahead.
Yeah, I just think that's going to set up for some really interesting role playing too, because it does make the challenge so much harder if you are into griefing or that really aggressive person on the server. Like, it's going to be more of a challenge, but it also gives people who aren't into that a chance to fight back or just disengage completely and run off and like avoid that situation.
Yeah, we saw so few instances of PvP that I really can't wait to see how it kind of transforms, if it's what Bethesda wanted or if it morphs into something really weird that they didn't anticipate.
Yeah, and so I think it just opens the door to a lot of possibilities of seeing like how people can interact with each other. I think that's really exciting.
I'm curious if there's going to be like an option you opt into.
There is one opt-in thing on your Pip-Boy that's really cool. It's like a radio signal called Hunter Hunted. And when you opt in, you get a quest. And it waits for at least 4 people to opt into that radio signal. And if they all opt in, then you get a target.
Oh.
One person is your hunter and one person's your hunted. So it's kind of like a round robin, like you have to find someone and you have to also watch out for someone in your back. And then it enables PvP with those people.
That's
cool. So yeah. That's like a great way to do that without having, again, just like core griefing and like how awful that can feel for a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I like that a whole lot. That's great.
Also, if you die, you only drop your junk. and a little paper baggie. So hey, people can't loot it, but it's just crafting materials. So, which is nice.
And then we have to ask you, there is video on IGN. Maybe Dan's going to have it queued up now, but the nuke. Got to ask about that. That was, what's it like? Did you get nuked? Did you nuke anyone?
Yeah. So the demo ends like after 3 hours. One of the developers, I guess, launched a nuke at Fault 76, that area around it. And they had everyone come back as like a viewing party to watch the world end.
Oh, God.
Morbid, but cool.
It is very morbid. When you start thinking like, why are we celebrating nukes dropping in the... Whatever. That's a video game. All right. So, yeah, it doesn't look that great. I wonder if it's because this is also a huge map and very few parts are instanced. It has to account for all the players in the server and this zone that changes before your eyes. Like, when you nuke an area, that becomes the end game content. Like, the place gets irradiated, monsters get even crazier, there's better loot.
You have to have like a crazy rad suit to go there.
A bunch of people, including myself, ran in as soon as the nuke went out.
Sounds
that, worse. That's how you end your demo. And then we just like, it was like, dead. Like, you were dead in 5 seconds, unless you had like power armor with rad resist and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, it didn't look the greatest. Like, at the time, I was just like, ooh, it's so pretty. But like, you know, looking back in the footage, I'm like, yeah, it looks kind of stiff. And
it makes me wonder. I mean, when games like DayZ and Rust, there was this point where the server, whatever server shard you were on, had been live for so long that there were like full metropolises built and, you know, players had already had endgame stuff. So they were like really like a tight group of people with assault rifles and C4 and all that. They were really hard to displace. And so eventually, occasionally, servers would just get wiped. And I'm curious, this sounds a little bit like that. Like, what happens after 10 players drop nukes and the entire map is just full of pot-marked radiation?
I wasn't able to ask about that, but I heard someone saying, I don't know if it was confirmed, that like you can only do nukes like once a week.
Oh,
they might be spread out. Mm. I would imagine that at least like maybe like, you know, once a day.
Yeah.
Like, so you can't like light the entire map at once. It'd be kind of crazy. And the way to obtain a nuke is going to be very long and arduous. Like, it's part of the main quest, as well as side quests. You have to find launch codes on high level monsters. You have to find the site where you can launch the nuke from. Then you target the place. So I think it's going to be a very rare event that you see the nuke going off. And then that's why everyone wants to come together and go, oh, let's watch the nuke go off.
It'll be like a server event.
And like, this is also, it's a very cosmetic change too. Like, it doesn't like flatten all the locations.
Right. Everything's just like kind of a little darker.
Yeah. It makes it, it's like the giant like orange mist that takes over the place. Like,
oh, cool.
But nothing gets uprooted. I think if you have a camp there, it probably gets damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good way to displace people you don't want camping
here's
there.
Here's the viewing party we're about. If you're watching on video, we're about to watch the nuke go off.
And there was some Bethesda guys there with power armor too.
Wow, but you guys are entirely too close to that nuke. This is like,
it's gonna be okay.
I mean, this is like the scene from Terminator 2. It's just like,
that's why Vault Boy has the thumbs up, because he's has his eye against the mushroom cloud, and we didn't do that. So too big.
That doesn't look that bad. That looks more stylized than bad.
It looks flat. Like, especially
it does look flat.
It gets a little worse looking as it goes. But
now, yeah,
I'm sure they prefaced before you did your preview, like, what state of development is this in? Is this like pre-alpha?
It was locked off at least 2 or 3 weeks before the event, and then it's still working since then.
Got it.
So it wasn't like the most recent build. Yeah.
It was a work in progress.
Yeah, and then, you know, they might go back and update stuff. Like,
it'll live on.
An online game, and they said that they would be looking at feedback to update post-launch. Like, they have updates planned down the road, but they also have space for like watching how people react and go, okay,
good.
Everyone's at the end game content and they want something different. Let's do this instead.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk about, you were in West Virginia. I took a quick trip to LA to play Hitman 2 for a day, which I feel like kind of nobody's talking about Hitman right now, even though I know we put up a gameplay video of the Miami map at the racetrack. At
E3. I was there at
E3. Way over a million views. Like, there is a group of dedicated stealth / Hitman fans out there. This is, if you're watching the video now. So the mission was set in Colombia, and you had three targets to pick off, and you could do them in any order in any way you wanted to. And in an hour of playing, I
killed everyone.
I only got one.
Really?
One of the three targets, because I was, you know, I like to try and really take my time and
thank you.
I'm kind of a perfectionist.
Yeah.
Oh, same here.
Oh, for sure.
I don't like to just go in and
You don't just want to throw a grenade through the window. Yeah. It's like, I need to get the rat poison and so then go change into the chef's outfit.
No, that's just the nice thing about him, and because it does give you so many options to do that.
Yes.
Like how to figure out how to do that is unique.
And that really, and that was, that strength is very much on display in this mission. You know, if you played the 2016 reboot, which the whole point of that was to get back to the sandbox style Hitman gameplay, the very open-ended gameplay. This is just more of that, except this one's not episodic. It's going to be a fully featured $60 game where you get everything out of the box at launch. You don't have to prepay and wait for new drops to happen every so often. And yeah, I just, I tell you, I had a great time with it. This is, I think, the beginning, right when I dropped in. But the first one I chose, so I just organically was walking around and found this tattoo artist. We probably won't have time to get to it here because there's just a lot of exploration in this early gameplay. But I posted up at the bar, just you do like a blend in, and you're just hanging out at the bar, and you overhear the tattoo artist. So here it is, saying, "Oh, man, I got to do this. Like, I guess this drug lord wanted him specifically. He's like a world-renowned tattoo artist. He's like, he was super scared. Like, if I screw up, he's going to kill me. This guy just kills anybody. So what did I do? I, of course, poisoned his drink and wore his clothes.
Well, he does have tattoos on his arms. Like, well, I guess I'll just put these on.
Well, somehow, I don't know. You do get later on if you see the disguise later, you do have the tattoos.
So
on your
you
arms.
Skinned him.
Well, I don't know if they're like, I don't know what he's how Agent 47 pulls this off, but yeah. So this is just a lot of the blending in.
You
and
just
listening
grab a marker. You just copy everything.
Just,
only takes a few minutes, right?
Like, I see you are the renowned tattoo artist. Like, it's like a smiley face just stapled on him.
But anyway,
I mean, 47 does have that barcode tattoo.
Dan's skipping around. So this is. Oh, yeah, we went too far. Well, there's the outfit. We skipped me waiting for him to go to the bathroom, vomit, and then
fast forward.
This is like a very intense skip around. Right here. There he is. So his ear got poisoned.
I hate Agent 47 in that outfit.
He looks like Jamie Kennedy. Neck, but he's just an innocent tattoo artist.
Yeah, he didn't do anything wrong. He's just scared.
So he just got a little tummy ache and a little nap. You took his tattoos off.
And stripped.
I saw that you skinned him.
See?
No, his skin's still there.
Threw him out the window. Threw him out the window and then into the dumpsters. He'll be fine.
Oh, yeah.
Secret here is that his tattoos were actually sleeves, like real sleeves.
Oh, like the Halloween ones you bought?
Yeah, I guess so, but
you're not a famous tattoo artist at all. You're a fake.
You're from.
Oh, I like how you poison him, strip him, throw him out a window, and then just ever so gingerly set him in the dumpster.
It'll just feel like a bad dream later. It's like, fine. Yeah. But anyway, an hour, I barely dented this mission. I really had a good time. I love how open-ended and huge the map is and the sandbox is. So, yeah, this game's out in November something. I don't remember quite when. I think it's mid-November for this one. But, yeah, you know, if Splinter Cell's been MIA for so long and Metal Gear is over, basically. So
I love Hitman because it's like one of the few pure stealth games we have left.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point.
Because things like, you know, Dishonored is just like, oh, you can be stealthy or you can kill everybody. And they make it so enticing. Yeah. It's just like there's no penalty for getting spotted. In a game like Hitman, if you get spotted, you're not like this superhero.
Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you get
real bad.
Shot.
I really love that it rewards your patience too, because whenever it comes to stealth, even like with Dishonored, I always get a little agitated because it feels like I'm just sitting around for so long trying to figure out what to do next. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, there's obviously a lot of options there, but I'm the ultra cautious. Like, if I'm going to go stealth, I'm going full in. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure I'm not spotted at all. But this one, just because it is designed for that, it rewards you for that.
And here's Dan, fast forward if you're watching on video. This is Andrea Martinez, who has been – that's one of the three targets. I've managed to get up to her office.
Oh, my
– you punched her in the face, snapped her neck.
Oh!
Well, she's a target, dude.
What was her name?
Let her live.
What was her name?
And then this guy was like, so had to run after this point. So things did go to hell.
It's okay, I'm professional.
You threw such an awesome pronunciation of her name on the front. It's like she came to life.
Well, it's Columbia. Like, no. I'm trying to be respectful to
people. I appreciate
that. Had a backstory and everything.
But like, she's real to me now.
I did not appreciate her boots, though. They were like, I guess I understand, like, it's a little bit muddy maybe where she was, but did not match your top.
Oh, I see.
Well,
my commentary.
She's dead now.
I don't know much about her. That's all I know.
That's the last time she'll ever make a bad fashion choice. And then I just end up.
For committing fashion crimes, I sentence you to death.
Oh. You're literally the fashion. You're the fashion judge, jury, and execute.
All right. So anyway, yeah, just kind of. So if you want to read more and see more, please check out my preview on IGN that has the full gameplay videos embedded in there.
Don't let stealth games die. They're beautiful.
Yeah,
I love
if you
them.
Google just IGN Hitman 2, you should pop up right away because it's the most it's the most recent Hitman thing we have on the site.
I think this is going to be like one of those games I'm going to love to just bundle up in December and like get a bunch of blankets and just play because it like again, it's a slower paced thing. Like it does get tense, but you can just take your time.
Totally agree. Yeah.
The mental picture of you like all cutely bundled up and just like, I'm just going to kill people today with your mug of cocoa. Oh, I shot that guy in the face.
I have like a little bear onesie that I put
on
here.
Yeah. Really it's 100% what I'm picturing.
Cozy.
Yeah.
Some nice mugs too.
Hey, you know, it's whatever.
I'll set the scene.
That's video games. It's
nothing says December like throwing a drug lord in a wood chipper.
I hope there's a wood chipper.
Is that an option?
Yeah, there's always a wood chipper. Fargo really paved the way. Yeah.
There will always be a wood chipper in a post Fargo world. Anyway, so yeah, there's Hitman 2 for you. Now let's move on because we're already 25 minutes into a very busy show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll even see if we get to all of our news stories. But so I wanted to start. We'll go biggest story down to least big and just see how far we get. xCloud, Project xCloud. Yeah. You may remember from E3 this year, Microsoft teased, hey, in the future, we're going to do a streaming thing so anybody can play from anywhere. And we're like, wait, what? Well, here it is. Project xCloud will allow developers to, quote, deploy and dramatically scale access to their games across all devices on Project xCloud with no additional work. Microsoft's plan is to begin public trials next year so they can learn and scale with different volumes and locations. It will allow developers to blah, blah, blah. Managed to copy that twice because I suck at my job.
No, you're great.
No.
Oh, Microsoft is also planning on, quote, developing a new game-specific touch input overlay that provides maximum response in a minimal footprint for players who choose to play without a controller.
I'm real curious about this.
Yeah.
A lot of people have tried to do capacitive touch input displays for first-person shooters, and I don't – can't recall one of them that was good. So
I will say,
sure.
I will say in defense of, I guess, in the other side of that though, my nephews, one's just turned 15, the other one's 12. The two of them, whenever I'm over at their house now, they do nothing but play PUBG Mobile.
I was about
and they're
to
like,
say.
One's on an iPad, one's on his iPhone. And they might as well have a gamepad in their hands.
Yep.
Like, I'm like, wow. I know I'm old because like that looks crazy to me.
Yeah. So I mean, to qualify, I haven't checked out the Fortnite or PUBG.
So I have played PUBG on mobile a good bit. Yeah. And, it's not as like precise as you would like with a controller or with a mouse and keyboard, obviously. But it definitely works. I mean, it feels good enough for what you're playing. It's definitely harder because depending on the screen size that you're playing with too, it's just like, is that a person or is that a leaf?
Yeah.
And so like,
I could see that.
It is a little bit more challenging and just because of your optics, but yeah, it totally works.
Something like Forza, I imagine. I mean, if you saw the trailer for the Project xCloud announcement,
mm-hmm.
Forza featured pretty heavily. And I feel like that's a really good sort of software.
I mean, they're showing that you can use a controller with this. So obviously you have to have like a little thing to attach to your controller.
Oh, like a, yeah. Oh, like
playing Cuphead on an iPad? Yeah. I can't even imagine
thing,
that.
You know, everyone knows the thing is.
Playing what?
They're just showing playing Cuphead on an iPad. Yeah. I'm like,
oh, jeez.
Oh,
how much do I hate myself today?
I recognize some people in this video, but.
Yeah.
Latency. So Microsoft says Microsoft's plan, they're working to solve through advances in networking topology and video encoding and decoding. And the idea is you'll be able to use any Xbox One controller because they're all Bluetooth mm-hmm. and connect to yeah. your device mm-hmm. and game on.
Yeah. So you'll essentially be streaming the software from what is essentially they took Xboxes and broke them down to their most basic components and as blades and put them into like these server stacks.
Yes.
So they have server farms that are just essentially full of Xboxes that you'll be able to stream from to your device.
Mm-hmm.
Which in theory sounds great.
It's almost like another – it's like the – flip side of the coin to what, and I know it's kind of maligned right now, but what Crackdown 3 is trying to do.
Right, with the with its cloud computing.
Yes,
yeah.
With the using extra power with these cloud-based server shards.
And that,
is sort of like taking another approach to that.
Yeah. That was the big selling point, right? It's like, look, it doesn't matter what's in this plastic box, because if you're connected to the cloud, you have essentially, I mean, realistically not, but infinite amount of computing power. From the sky.
The cloud.
It'll crunch all your numbers for you and beam it back down into your plastic box.
Yeah.
This is slightly different. Oh, sorry. Should be on silent here. It's a slightly different version of that where it's you are basically, I guess, renting an Xbox to stream, that content to your phone. But again, in theory, this sounds really cool. In practice, I mean, game streaming services have been around for a long time now and none of them have really taken off.
Yeah. Sony's hasn't quite caught on. Like, they had a lot of technical issues in the early days. I know it's working to a point now, but it's not.
Switch
like,
is trying in Japan for Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I want to see how that works.
Right, and Google Chrome thing.
Yeah, I will say though, if there are any companies on the face of the planet that I think could pull this off, it's Google and Microsoft.
That's true.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I mean, Wi-Fi is one thing, right? Over the internet, but in the trailer, they were talking about using like 5G technology, which isn't even out yet. So it sounds like they're going to also support, you know, cellular service streaming, which terrifies me.
Yeah. I could not imagine the phone bill.
Yeah.
If it was on my phone or something.
Yeah. If you're on a data plan.
I'm still grandfathered into that AT&T unlimited data and my monthly price keeps going up just because I don't want to get rid of it.
No, you got to keep it.
But I don't think I even use enough to warrant it, so this might change my mind.
There's that, and I don't know, like, I personally don't think I would use this just because, I mean, just right off the bat, my instincts is like I'd rather sit down and play games.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too.
I'm kind of still of the mind of, unless I've seen a movie or a show a billion times, I don't really like watching it on my phone. Mm-hmm. I prefer to watch it like on a screen and give it, you know, a little bit more attention. But like, it's like there's like the joke of like, oh, that's an airplane movie, right?
Yeah.
It's like, because it's on a small screen, it's not an optimal viewing experience. And I think the same thing goes for games.
I think you're totally right.
But I would like to say that this is like a really awesome opportunity to let other people play games that don't have an Xbox. And that's kind of what the hint on a lot in the video. It's just like, hey, maybe you're not a console gamer. Maybe you just don't have one in your family or your friends don't have one. But this is your chance to experience some of those games. I'm curious about like how pricing goes, because I could see them saying like, well, it's still a $60 game because it's the full game. It's not our fault if you choose to play it on your phone.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go next. Is I presume this is basically the next evolution of Play Anywhere.
Yep.
But will xCloud carry its own subscription cost with it?
Right.
Like, if you want to use this, like, yeah, if you just buy the game, you don't have to buy the game again. But, you know, okay, you've got your Game Pass to get your library, but are you going to need an xCloud subscription as well?
Right. So I kind of wonder how all of that will fit in to like make the accessibility claim actually valid. Because I could see, again, people, not everyone can afford the brand new consoles. And I think giving this option could be like a great entry point for people who can't invest in those. But yeah, price point for the service at all is also a concern.
I mean, literally almost everyone has a smartphone, whereas not literally everyone has a console.
Yeah. And then of course the other part is, well, if someone else is using TV, you can just grab a tablet or a smartphone and then just go play somewhere
else. That's what the Switch does. That's how the Switch gets used in a lot of people's homes. Yeah. A lot of friends I talk to are like, oh yeah, significant others on the TV, so I just busted out the Switch for a while.
Mom says, my turn. You use the phone.
Just my off-the-hip opinion, I don't think they can charge subscription for this. I don't think this is a marquee enough feature that will stand out as something you need to pay in addition to. If you're paying for Game Pass and Xbox Live, $60 a year and $10 a month, so $180 a year if my math skills line up, you're already buying into their ecosystem, and this is just an opportunity to allow you. I mean, it's really, really genius when you think about it, because it sounds like it's a way to pull people into the Microsoft ecosystem that don't necessarily own an Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
So you get your Gold account, you get your Game Pass account, and then you start buying games on the Microsoft Store if you want to, and you can stream all of that to your phone.
And I see both of your points about it kind of being an entry point in that, like, hey, maybe there's some games you start to really like, and you start, and then you're like, and then you find out, oh, well, I have a 4K TV at home. It turns out I could go buy the Xbox One X or the probably the Scarlett by the time this is out, and I could have like a full fidelity 4K experience for when I'm playing at home too, and maybe that gets some people in the door in the Xbox ecosystem to a deeper, you know, to spend more money within the ecosystem.
Yeah. Oh, I am wondering like how this is playing into the, I'm sorry. I can't remember the name of it, but the bundle, the entry bundle that we were talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Xbox One and Game Pass and gold for whatever. And then you pay throughout the life of it. I'm curious like how this plays in with that. Like if we see a skew of a Xbox that doesn't have a hard drive, that's just streaming. And
that was rumored.
And I hesitate to say that because flashback to 2013 where they revealed this box that can stream and you have to have an internet connection and check in once a day, but you never have to download a game. You never have to, you never have to put a disc in a tray. It's just, oh, I want to play this. I'm playing it now because it's streaming.
Yeah, I think they've set themselves up better for that, especially with Game Pass. I think it makes that library and that accessibility a little bit more visible of like, oh, this is kind of what it's like. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm grabbing this and now I have it and I don't have to go out and buy it. It's just part of the thing that I'm already paying for.
Yeah.
And so maybe the streaming reality isn't so as far-fetched now as it was then.
It's super exciting. Microsoft has been, or the Xbox division in particular, has been so smart in setting up infrastructure for the next generation of whatever consoles are going to be. And people are saying, well, the next generation will be the last generation of consoles, but they've been saying that for a long time. I mean,
you're right, though. It's really cool to see, you know, hey, Microsoft's had a period where they really struggled a lot.
It's been a bad couple of years.
But over the last really year, I guess it goes back a little further than that. But in recent times, seeing the bigger picture of what they're going for and the future they are playing for, and now starting to see some of that come together. We saw a lot of it at E3.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to see that. And now we have maybe the next piece of that here in a late breaking report from Kotaku, our friends over there, Obsidian.
Excellent segue.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Obsidian Entertainment, makers of, well, let's see. I mean, they did the Xbox exclusive Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Mm-hmm. Fallout New Vegas.
The not exclusive, but an excellent game in its own right. Mm-hmm. South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Pillars of Eternity.
That's their current new IP that was
Did they do one and Deadfire or...
Yes.
That's all them.
That's all them.
They have done, I'm trying to think of some of their, I mean, they're such a great, I mean, the old Icewind Dale stuff from back in the day.
Imagine their next RPG if it was fully funded by Microsoft.
Yeah.
Well, and that's exactly what we're looking at here. So
Ryan and I had this conversation about Microsoft Stable does not really have that core RPG studio, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obsidian is the perfect piece to put into that to fill that void.
Right, and they have like really unique RPGs as well. I think having isometric RPGs is not really common nowadays. And seeing how they've done with Pillars of Eternity is really impressive. So it'd be kind of cool just to have that as part of.
But it's not even just – I totally agree. I think Divinity Original Sin 2 is fantastic. I don't think we have enough core CRPG-like games anymore. But Obsidian knows how to do a first-person RPG with Fallout. They know how to work with licenses with South Park. You know, these guys know what they're doing. They know how to make an RPG. And it's really great to be like, hey, this is what we want to work with. Give us money to make it real.
So this isn't we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. It's not a done deal. Kotaku reporting that Microsoft is very close to purchasing Obsidian Entertainment. They say, quote, Microsoft is finalizing a deal to acquire the independent development studio Obsidian Entertainment, according to three people briefed on the negotiations. This is Kotaku saying, we don't know if ink is on paper yet, and plenty of major acquisition deals have fallen apart in the final hours.
That's fair.
But those close to the companies believe it is all but done. One person with knowledge of the deal told Kotaku they'd heard it was, quote, 90% finished. A second person said, quote, it's a matter of when, not if. Now, everything you just said, Brandon, applies.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We got excited and jumped the gun.
Well,
so if you kind of want to learn more about – I'm a little semi-shameless self-promotion here. But if this does happen and you want to learn about, hey, I want to learn more about Microsoft's new acquisition here. Who are these Obsidian guys? I have done an IGN Unfiltered interview with two of the key folks at Obsidian. Fergus Urquhart came in here and told a bunch of incredible stories about all the times they got burned by their licensed agreements. You know, they made a great South Park video game only to see Ubisoft come in and buy it when THQ fell apart, and then Ubisoft kept the sequel internal rather than have Obsidian do it, so that had to not be great for them. They had
the Aliens,
the Aliens Crucible role playing game that Josh Sawyer tells that story if you watch that Unfiltered of how that all went down with Sega. That apparently was pretty far along and looking really good, and then of course the most infamous Fallout New Vegas with the game did come out and it was great. But they had this Metacritic bonus in there that they fell like a point short and didn't get a big bonus, even though the game sold millions upon millions
of
copies.
And it's still widely regarded as one of the better Fallouts.
It absolutely is. So this strikes – Brandon, you and I were talking out before we came on the air that this feels like a win-win for both parties and not unlike the Ninja Theory.
Yeah.
Where in Ninja, remember Ninja Theory's own words in the video they put out at E3 – talking about why they decided to agree to the acquisition by Microsoft, that they said, hey, like, we make this stuff we're super passionate about, but we have no safety net. Like, if it fails, the livelihoods of our entire studio is at risk. And, you know, I can't speak for Obsidian, but the sense I get from talking to Josh and talking to Fergus and is that Obsidian is closer to that than not, where, you know, they are still one of the last remaining
big
independent large size studios, and if something goes wrong, it can spell serious trouble for them.
Yeah, I'm amazed they're still independent. I mean, once you get to a certain size, right, you need to be able to have, like you said, that safety net. You need to be able to pay your employees. The more employees you have, the more dangerous it becomes to not, you know, be profitable with whatever it is you're working on. So these guys are great at what they do. I'm really surprised no one has scooped them up yet. And maybe they wanted to maintain their independence, you know. But I'm hopeful in the sense that Microsoft has come out and said, we're acquiring these guys and we're basically going to give – by these guys, I mean the many studios they've announced since E3. Basically going to give them carte blanche to make whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And like the team at Ninja Theory who make things they're super passionate about, the pedigree of Obsidian coming in, making an RPG they're passionate about with support from Microsoft, both financial and technological. Hoo boy. Like that's
awesome, take risks.
That is a cool. Yeah, exactly. Like they're passionate about this one thing, but they know it's not going to be a mainstream success.
Right.
But now they're in a position where maybe they can prototype that a little longer. Maybe they can put resources into doing things that aren't all dedicated to making the thing that makes the money to, you know, pay their employees.
Yeah, not making a safe sequel to something that I was like, okay, we've seen this before. Like something new, something crazy.
I love new IPs.
Yes.
It's so exciting, but I understand why they don't happen as much because it's a gamble. But
like, Senua's Sacrifice was a Hellblade was like a big gamble.
Oh, it was huge. Absolutely. It was also in development for we heard about it. We knew it existed for like 5 years before
After
it came out.
Enslaved was the project prior to Hellblade, right?
Correct. No, they did something between
they
the
did?
Two.
Okay. Sorry.
I believe they did something between the two. But man, Enslaved was great too.
I just like want to see more of that. Like more passionate projects.
I mean, of the studio acquisitions, I think it's reasonable to suggest that Playground is probably not doing a new thing. I mean, they sort of are because they'll be bringing Fable back, it seems, but then hopefully continuing Forza Horizon, which is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It's out, and I was just tweeting before I came in here on a quick side note. I feel like we're finally at the point. It's taken a couple of horizons, but I feel like we're finally at the point where Playground and Horizon is getting its due as literally the greatest car game, if not ever, but in the last decade plus. Like, I think it being on Game Pass is huge.
Yeah,
and I feel like it really flew under the radar. It was just like, oh, it's Forza Motorsport's little baby brother offshoot. But no, now it's like,
look who's all grown up.
Well, it's like Horizon's better than Motorsport. Don't tell Turn 10.
Yeah, well, that's
Turn 10.
Father, I have returned.
Motorsport's great too.
Well, but, your voice is so deep. You have a full beard.
But in any case, yeah, you got to figure they're probably going to keep doing their thing.
Yeah.
But now with Fable as well as Forza Horizon, but figure Ninja Theory's probably going to work on something new as their first big project.
Oh, I want it to be just batshit insane.
We've talked about it doesn't make necessarily a lot of sense for there to be another one.
Hellblade 2? Right? Yeah, no.
So
I'm still crazy.
Hellblader.
And then I think the other studio acquisitions, Compulsion, I mean, unless I feel like We Happy Few didn't necessarily light the world on fire,
right? Well,
commercially,
yeah. And it's also a Gearbox,
right? It was you got to figure that's probably they're going to be doing something new.
Yeah, I talked to them a couple months ago, and they had said they're not talking about what they're working on after We Happy Few until We Happy Few is done in the world out there. So, I'm looking forward to seeing them switch gears and seeing something from them in the next year.
I guess yeah. So, what do you guys want to see out of if this Obsidian deal goes through? What kind of we can assume it's a role playing game.
Yeah.
That's their specialty. Now, Microsoft would own Pillars of Eternity because that is Obsidian's IP which would make a ton of sense if they did want to continue that as both an Xbox CRPG and certainly a very much a PC CRPG as well. But yeah, where do they go? Where does Obsidian go?
Oh, man. I would love to see them staff up to continue the Pillars of Eternity series and then have another team make a post-apocalyptic first-person RPG.
I just want some sort of first-person RPG. I'm not super big on isometric RPGs, so.
It would be nice to see them, like, you know, not obviously not Fallout like New Vegas, but making something in that similar, like an open-world, bigger RPG with their full cash behind them of realizing they're like, hey, let's go crazy with our next RPG and make it huge in scope.
Yeah. My only downside to that is that I don't want to wait 6 years to play this thing, you know?
Well, sure. But these are all forward thinking, like,
yeah.
Just like all the other studio acquisitions. Yeah. These are not going to pay off for the gamer tomorrow. These are all Scarlet Era things.
Yeah, but like,
is make the games they
want
to make.
Yeah, that's true. But the question is, like, what do we want them to make? And
I want them to make what they want to make.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's you're just cheating.
Make your dreams.
if you believe it, you can achieve it. I would love to see some sort of first person RPG from them because we don't really have anything else like that outside of Fallout and Elder Scrolls. Right. Bethesda's sort of got the market cornered there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could say Prey, but that's also Bethesda. So I would love to see that, but I don't want it to come out like at the end of Scarlet's life cycle, you know? And if it did and it blew the doors off, that would be awesome. But, that team is too good to like not play something from them for 3 years.
I have some words for you, Brandon.
What?
There will be other games between now and then.
You don't know that.
It's true. They could just stop making games altogether. Everyone. Entire world.
I imagine.
Yeah. I hope not.
Yeah, right.
That'd be so
well, bad. We're all out of jobs.
Anyway.
I imagine the initiative is going to be making a third-person cinematic action game, so that's going to be great. And I say that because the initiative is a quadruple A studio, right?
Yeah, the make the Sony style.
Make the Sony. I was trying not to say
well,
it, but
you know,
it's like.
They've got, speaking of cornering the market, that's sort of Sony's market.
So I believe the initiative is going to make the big Sony blockbuster game for the Scarlet. And then Obsidian make a great RPG. Hellblade do something wacky that just astounds. Ninja Theory make something wacky that astounds.
Playground brings Fable back and keeps Horizon rolling.
You give me an open world Fable, I'm excited.
Suddenly,
I'm excited.
You've got one hell of a first party portfolio.
It's looking real good,
Ryan. Next generation of Xbox.
It's looking real good.
Halo on the horizon. New games.
Infinite.
Gears 5. I mean, Gears 5 will close out the Xbox One generation. seemingly in grand fashion from what that incredible E3 showing. And then Infinite.
I'm excited.
I can't wait.
I'm so excited.
I
next generation.
I can't wait to see what's doing. So.
I've got Scarlet Fever.
How many months do we have till E3?
It's lethal.
Don't you even say that. Don't say that.
I know. I'm just excited about new things.
I literally woke up at 6:30 in the morning the other day, and I was just like, oh, I can't.
Let's move on. We've only got time here for probably one more of the stories.
Who was the lucky one?
Yeah. Well, let's do – we got to talk Telltale here. I did tease it at the top after all.
Yeah, I think that's important.
So Skybound, Robert Kirkman's production company, of course, parent of Walking Dead, has said, quote, "We've successfully negotiated with Telltale Games for our company Skybound to come in and see season 4 of the Telltale game to completion," said Robert Kirkman. According to a statement from Skybound, the company, quote, "has taken ownership of Telltale's The Walking Dead, the final season, and will finish the season. Skybound will work with members of the original Telltale team to finish the story in a way the fans deserve. Skybound will continue to update fans on the status of the game on their various social medias and websites." Well, that's all well and good, but I hope employees come first. And,
yeah.
You know, I know – I'm sure I don't even begin to understand the complicated nature of this, as far as – I can't imagine Skybound will be paying the severance that none of them got or anything like that.
Nope.
This is probably going to be a contract situation of just come in and we'll pay you for your
– goods for services.
Time right. to complete this, which is certainly better than what they've the shaft they got from Telltale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, like I'm hesitant to speak on it because I don't know. I know there were a lot of job fairs, a lot of other publishers and developers and studios and what have you stepped up and like we're really doing a lot of outreach. So on paper, this sounds like maybe they get, you know, a couple more months of work out of it and give them time to set up whatever that transition to the next thing is. But God, I hope in those negotiations, which I don't imagine were very hard. Like there's not a whole lot to negotiate.
Hey, you're dead. Can we? Yeah.
Like, listen, we will literally put your game out, but like, here are our demands, kind of thing. And again, I know nothing about how
and that's also
situations work. So,
unfortunately, probably only for, you know, of the 200 plus people that got laid off, not everyone's going to get a shot at helping. Like, you know, the marketing, the video teams, like they're probably not going to be used. So they don't.
VR and all kinds of. Yeah, you're very accurate. And the question is also fair to pose is. Who of the original team will be available? Because hopefully those job fairs have paid off, and some of that, hopefully many of those affected employees have found new work.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
I wonder,
a tough situation.
Kind of, they'll have to just patch it together.
In a good situation, I hope that they give like a consulting fee. It's just like, could you consult with us on where we should go, and we'll pay you for your input.
Yeah, and
like
your
that.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe something you can work.
I would hate for there to be a situation where it's like, well, I've accepted a position at, you know, Activision Blizzard and I start there next week, but oh God, I really want to finish this, my baby. I really want to finish this up, you know, so I imagine that could be a hard decision, but hopefully everyone is employed at the end of this and
yeah,
the game comes out.
Hopefully no one's pressured to go like, just tell us the ending is, we'll just do it and not pay you for it.
Yeah.
I would presume it was at least, if there wasn't an actual script for 3 and 4 yet, I'm sure there had to be for 3 by this point, maybe not quite 4, but there's obviously an outline.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how much of it was done? Presumably, Skybound gets access to the Telltale engine, maligned as it is, mm-hmm. but that's what they're working, you know, the engine and the assets, mm-hmm. I would think they'll get access to everything to
I'm curious,
complete the project.
I'm curious if they own it or if they're essentially licensing it to complete this.
I would this
game.
Assume the latter, but I mean, again, we don't know the full details of it is. Until we find out more, we can't really say. But I just hope everyone affected.
Yeah. Well, good on Skybound.
Yeah, good stuff for them. So
I like that.
Jeez.
So, we'll definitely be keeping a very close eye on that story as it continues to unfold. There are obviously no timelines for when that could happen. They have to piece a team together and get the project managed and planned out. Now, these Telltale had been typically cranking these out every couple of months or so. So we're here in October. I would not be at all surprised if we don't see anything until early 2019 mm-hmm. out of this, but mm-hmm. at least it does seem like it is going to get done, which a week ago that wasn't going to happen. So best wishes to the affected employees and hopefully creatively some of you can get some closure with wrapping up the final season of what has been an excellent run of video games. All right. Let's move on now. Quick new segment.
What?
The marketplace report is dead. Oh. We murdered it and dumped it in the bin outside
with,
the window.
Did you steal tattoos?
Yeah. So we took it to a bar first.
We punched it in the face and snapped its neck.
We poisoned its drink. Chunked it out in the bathroom.
Oh, no.
Now, Ryan,
marketplace report.
Ripped its clothing.
I came in at a good time, didn't I?
Welcome to the show.
It's pandemonium. Now, Ryan, I fear change. So what is this new segment?
All right. So we thought, you know, we get a lot of requests from the audience. Like, well, do you guys ever do, like, take reader questions or this or talk about what you're playing or that?
We just took one. Ha.
So,
done for the week.
We thought rather than go over a mile-long list of games that none of you and none of us has ever played or will ever play, which is most, unfortunately, of what the release list is each week. It's just an odd dumping ground now. We thought, well, let's maybe put this time to better use. So I thought, well, we could call it the loot box because it will just be different each week and you don't know what you're going to get until you get to that segment.
Do I have to pay to play this
and
game?
And also, this show now costs $4.99.
So. Oh, no.
I mean, oh, sure. Yeah, we want to do that? Can we do that? No, it will not cost you anything.
I got a phone.
Yeah, exactly.
It will not cost you anything. So we might do stuff AMAs from the audience where you just submit questions and we fire off a bunch of questions to the panel during the – whether it's about us or about Xbox games, whatever you want to do. We might do that. In fact, we'll start – let me float that out there. Unlocked@IGN.com. We'll take your questions next week. We'll do kind of a little impromptu short AMA segment. If you want to ask us something, talk Xbox in some way, let's do that. Unlocked@IGN.com. We might, if a game anniversary is coming around, we might spend time reminiscing about that. It's October, so odds are we might talk about our favorite spooky games this month during the loot box. And yeah, we have a couple of other ideas we're throwing around too. For this week, in fact, we're going to do spooky games right now.
Yeah!
Woo!
Boo.
Too spooky.
Time.
Surprised you.
Oh, man.
Nailed it.
You startled me.
So scared.
You look shocked. So, yeah, why not? We'll mix it up each week, and we'll start this week with, being October, our favorite spooky Xbox games ever, Miranda.
Yes. Hello.
Do you play spooky games?
No.
I don't either, really.
But scary games, no.
Yeah,
it's spooky.
They're not for everyone.
No. Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. You've got something that you've played that stands out in your memory.
So kind of in the spirit of Halloween and October and kind of the fall season, I wanted to talk a little bit about Night in the Woods, which is a great adventure game, kind of.
There's some spooky parts.
A little bit. Yeah, there's definitely spooky parts. There are mysteries.
Zoinks!
There are crimes. There's some crimes you can do. It's great. So I just think it's a great adventure where you start as this little cat who has just come home from college because she's not really feeling it. And so she has to go home and she's kind of working through why she came home from college and seeing her old friends from her old town in this kind of middle of nowhere fall season. So I highly recommend it. It's a little bit longer, and there's a lot of things you can explore and just kind of do. And
do crimes.
You can do crimes, which is the most important thing. And it's just got a great art style and really charming characters, and it's written really well, too. So
I've always heard nothing but good things about that game. Yeah. And it's one of those I've never gotten to. Mm-hmm. So sounds
I adore it.
Need to change that.
Is that the TV one that it's on the side and you walk left and right?
Okay. Yeah, and you can kind of jump up into things and explore.
I always mix that one up with the sort of top-down survival in the woods one with the boy with the...
Don't Starve?
Don't Starve, thank you.
Oh, yeah, not that one.
Don't Starve in the Woods at night.
Don't Starve in the night in the Woods.
Don't do that, too. Yeah. eat some food.
Brendan, you were not pre-briefed on this, so I'm kind of putting you on the spot. Do you have a favorite, particularly if it's been on Xbox?
Particularly on Xbox, okay. Well, in that case, recently in the last couple years, I was forced at gunpoint to do a guide for Resident Evil 7.
Ah.
And I think I spent 5 minutes outside the first house with the doorway into darkness.
Breathing into a paper bag.
I had the little This Is Fine plush dog in my lap. I'm just like, I can do this. I can do it. Just go in there and you would just write what happens.
Rampage.
Just close my eyes and go in. As the game progressed, I was more attuned to it. But those first opening hours of that game are terrifying. Yeah. And especially if you ever play like in the VR version, like that even.
Oh, yeah, I participated in the How Scary is Resident Evil 7 in VR thing that Destin put together where it was in the cabin and you're tied to the chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, God. I did that too.
That was intense.
And then you can
hear
them come behind you and you just can't see, like, where are they?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Or a severed head rolls across the floor. If you're not familiar with this, IGN sometimes does a series called How Scary, and it just gets a bunch of us big babies and
they
puts
make
us,
me do a lot of them.
Puts us in a room and like makes us play scary video games.
Thank you for doing them.
My coping mechanism is just make really bad jokes. So I'm on every video we do, I'm always just going like, oh, hey, it's a little head rolling. Hey, can you help me? Pass the knife?
And secretly, you're like, oh, I think I just beat a little.
Pretty much. I mask it well.
So you were able to gain some confidence as RE7 went on.
Wrote a whole damn guide, but I was scared the entire way.
Hold on. Like an unsafe working conditions. Like you should not be subject.
You should
to
bring
it.
That to my boss.
I think it started when I was just like, no, I won't do the horror games because I have severe anxiety problems with horror stuff, and I'm just like, I can't handle it. Yeah, I get super scared.
You know, Destin made me play Slender, the 8 pages. It was one of the first things I had to do. He just like, I need you to record this. I'm just like, why?
That's because Destin is the worst.
Yes.
Also, Destin's vote for his spooky game is Amnesia: Dark Descent.
I watched him stream that game. It was funny.
An actual scary game.
Yeah. Shout out to Destin.
he's not afraid.
Spooky.
Brandon?
So I'm like many of the panel here, I don't play scary games because I am the kind of dude that like I'll watch scary movies, but I like tense up and I'm like, oh God, just do it, just jump, just go. with a spooky game, nothing happens until you actually force it to happen. So like I feel like spooky games can be more evocative of emotion than movies can. Having said that, the last one I played was, I think, that Silent Hill 2 remastered collection that came out a couple years ago. I bought that. I got to the part in the apartment where you're in the closet and Pyramid Head walks by, and I was just like, nope. And I got up and walked away.
That was it?
Yep.
That was the extent of
it. It was like 90 minutes in, too. Yeah. If that. I'm just like, nah, I'm good. I don't need to do this.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
Silent Hill's known for...
They can't scare you if you walk away.
That's true. The only way to win is not to play. Yeah.
For me, this is such a great segment. We're like, oh, none of us play because we're all terrified little children, but that's okay. I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I don't do scary very well. I remember my ex-wife way back in the day wanted to watch The Ring, and I literally, like, I just didn't. I heard the movie, didn't watch the movie.
Yeah.
Are they
dead
yet?
Not a good movie.
Yeah, I feel like that's okay because the majority of that movie is about watching a shitty VHS tape, and you're just like, no, I'm good. It sounds really scary.
One game that I do adore that was definitely creepy AF at times was, see, I'm hip and cool.
Yeah.
The Youth.
You're down. You got the 411.
The original Condemned.
Yeah.
Xbox 360 launch title.
Was that the one with the mannequins?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. In the department store.
God,
also,
the original first person.
There's an abandoned school.
Yep.
All abandoned schools are haunting and terrifying.
Anytime I see mannequins in a video game, I freak out.
Yeah, the mannequins, that was bad.
Because those nurse mannequins in Silent Hill as well, right?
Yeah.
I feel like every horror game's got that good, like, inanimate object moves when you're not looking at it moment, and those are just no.
Yeah, the, Condemned is first person, so it's very in your face video game.
Yeah.
Towards the end, like, I feel like the second to last level, you're on some terrifying guy's, like, farm property, and it's just like, no. But I made it through the game. But not before. I had to call my friend Brian, and I was like, dude, you have to come over and
talk
with me.
Talk
like,
me down,
I
Brian.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it by myself. I did need moral support from a friend in order to make it through.
He just lights a sandalwood candle and like a good shoulder rub later, yeah, and you're like, all right, we can
I
do
won't
this.
Lie, when he had me do The Slender, I had Brian Mockowitz sit next to me while I played that game. Because I was like, I need someone, because I was all alone like in the office. So,
everyone's got a friend named Brian that helps them through horror games.
Yeah, I actually called my partner Brian. I was playing The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. So it's not even a horror game, but there's a scary segment, and I had to do a guide for it. And I was just like, why is this suddenly spooky? And I was like almost crying, and I had to get through this because I was freelance at the time. I wasn't going to turn it down. So I was like halfway through the game, I was like, Brian, I'm just really scared, and
you're
it keeps popping
great.
Out.
You're
and I just
got
to capture this.
I want to give a shout out to Brian's Everywhere for being there when we're scared.
Brian's.
So it's a strong
hashtag hug O'Brien.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there you go. Happy Halloween. Yeah.
With consent.
That's all right. First loot box is done. We made it. We shared our anxieties over spooky horror games.
So there's obviously plenty of like really great lists. We have plenty of lists about like true horror games. Yes. Chloe Rad, of course, knows plenty to play.
She has a cast iron stomach and heart. She can play those games.
She's the best of us.
She didn't like disassociate herself from whatever causes people to be afraid. And she's just like, oh yeah, it was pretty spooky. I'm like, what are you talking about?
So there you go. So yeah, send us your ask us anything questions for next week. Unlocked@IGN.com. That's the email address. And we'll, I mean, I guess I'm telling you then it won't be so random next week, but we're just getting it started. We'll get it started.
Yeah, or if you have ideas for something that you'd like us to talk about or segments, fire them away.
Yeah, we'll do this. We'll do something different every week for the loot box. All right, real quick, we're running late here. It is Unlock Block Trivia time, and Miranda, I'm hoping that we're gonna get some attempt at victory now. Now that Alana can't win.
Well, now that I've started in a whole alternate universe trivia, it's fine.
Like, doesn't exist.
AU trivia?
Doesn't exist.
And that one, Alana's up 10 points.
Okay.
You're happy whenever I host.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's all just look at her disapprovingly. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
It's fine.
Eric from Austin, Texas, whose gamer tag, if you'd like to friend him up, is Warrior0614. On Xbox.
Yeah, June 14th.
He sends his question in, and it's this. In the beginning of Beyond Good and Evil, for those of you who are BG&E fans, there's an animal walking around on the top, around the top of the lighthouse. You can't take a picture of it until you've obtained the zoom lens for your camera. What animal was it? I never played BG&E.
I know this one.
I never played Beyond Good and Evil.
So I love Beyond Good and Evil.
All right, what's funny is I tweeted about this when they revealed at E3.
Yeah, the sequel.
They did that sequel reveal, and I'm like, I'm 100% have to play Beyond Good and Evil.
Yeah.
Still haven't done it.
All right, well, the three of us would be guessing then. I'll go Brandon's way first. Do you want to take a shot here?
I mean, the seagull seems too obvious. Otters and penguins can't climb lighthouses. I'm going to go D monkey.
Okay.
I'm going to believe in that penguin.
Okay.
B penguin.
Good. Brendan, would you like to set us all straight on this?
Yeah, you're wrong, because otters can climb, and there's an otter at the top of the lighthouse, and he's cute. Right.
He's totally right. So we get to put Brendan on the board. Excellent job, Eric and Austin. That is a
Beyond
wonderful
Good and Evil
question.
It's got this really like cool
otter.
Farthest Cyclist is just taking pictures of animals and stuff.
I love it
because you're a journalist
already.
It's Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, pretty much. It's the best not Pokemon Snap there is.
Good stuff from Eric. If you would like to try and stump us, as Eric did quite a mostly 75%
well
good
done,
job
Eric.
Of doing, send your trivia question to unlocked@IGN.com, that same email address. Please include 4 multiple choice answers and note the correct one in your email, and we'll play again next week. We're getting towards the end of the year. Somebody's going to win that trophy.
What do we have? We got 2 weeks in October,
already in the running,
November, and 3 in December.
But, you know, there's some holidays in there with Thanksgiving and, holiday. So
we got less than 10 more shows?
Probably fewer than 10 more than 10 shows.
Fewer than 10. Thank you. Words.
I got your back. I'm an editor.
Do I get a participation trophy?
Yeah, I got it and noted it down.
Participation trophy.
Oh, not a little trophy. Not a literal trophy.
I'll draw it for you.
Thank you.
All right. Time to go. Let's do a little self-promotion, because why not? You've sat with us this long. You must clearly like us. Brendan Graber, where can we follow you online? What are you working on an IGN that we should be checking out?
You can follow me at @Raga_Fraga on Twitter. And as I just got back from Fallout, we'll have a lot of cool pieces. We already have Joe Screbble's preview tomorrow. On Wednesday, we'll have a lot of the little things we learned. And there's plenty more footage clips going up. And I'll be working on the wiki for that as well. And Assassin's Creed Odyssey, because I'm still working on that guide with our other guide team members. And oh boy, it's a heck of a fall for wikis.
Huge game. Use that Assassin's Creed Odyssey wiki if you're playing. It's, what, an 80-hour game. So odds are you'll need a little help at some point.
Yeah,
Brendan and the team have you covered.
There's a lot of hidden stuff, too, in that game. So some games are big, but, you know, pretty straightforward. Not one of them.
Miranda.
You can find me at Havoc Rose, and that's Havoc with a K. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, pretty much everywhere else. I think this week is the last episode of Anime Omake, which is an anime miniseries that I was a host on. I also had another anime feature go up this past weekend about the 5 best new anime from summer, in case you guys want to binge any anime anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
As far as game stuff goes, I am working on things, but I can't talk about them yet. So
That's how it goes in Q4.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of secrets. Sorry, guys.
I feel like this self-promotion segment is a lot of like neener, like, neener, neener.
Not on purpose.
No, yeah, I know. Because I'm the same way. Like, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Tyrell. It's just my name. I reviewed Assassin's Creed Odyssey. That went up last week.
Watch the review. The man slaved over it.
I really liked it. I also got a chance to unbox the $220 Pantheon Collector's Edition that comes with two statues. And they fit together in a cool way. So you can check that out, unboxing out too. And the rest of the stuff I can't talk about. I'm sorry. Maybe next week.
I'm on Twitter at DMC_Ryan. I plugged Unfiltered earlier. Go learn about the folks from Obsidian, Josh Sawyer and Fergus Urquhart, who apparently may be about to join the Microsoft family. And the Hitman preview, plugged that already as well. So I think that does it for me. Thanks to all of you for watching, for listening. Find us on unlocked.ign.com. Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, if you'd like to come to IGN, watch the show early, or if you prefer a podcast form or YouTube, that goes up on Wednesday at 3 p.m. on the respective platforms and channels. Thanks to the panel, as always. Brendan, thanks for the dropping the knowledge on Fallout 76.
The knowledge nuke.
Like a bomb. That's right. Well played. And we'll see everybody next week.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did it turn to the past?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
I need you to save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.